Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with a CBS World News Roundup. A savage cold wave today is punishing most parts of the United States east of the Rockies, and a lot of shivering, teeth-chattering Americans may already be comparing the winter of 1978 with the disastrous winter of 1977. Meteorologist Bob Harris of station WCBS in New York sums it up.
An enormous mound of Arctic air now covers much of the central and eastern United States. Temperatures range from 24 degrees below zero in Bismarck, North Dakota, to 6 below in Chicago, 13 above in Atlanta, 31 in New Orleans, and 38 degrees in West Palm Beach, Florida. In addition, gale force winds gusting to better than 50 miles per hour are producing dangerous wind chill readings of more than 40 below zero in portions of the Midwest and Northeast. In such cases, exposed flesh can be frostbitten in just a matter of minutes. While most of the nation will have dry weather today, there will still be locally heavy snow squalls near the Great Lakes, producing blizzard conditions at times in places like Cleveland and Buffalo. At least 6 more inches of snow will fall across western New York, western Pennsylvania, and northeastern Ohio today. Heavy snow showers will occur in Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine. Meanwhile, the West Coast continues to have wet and windy weather with above-normal wave action causing serious beach erosion along the California coast. In summary, just bundle up and batten down. This is meteorologist Dr. Bob Harris for CBS News in New York.
So far, at least 8 deaths have been blamed on the cold wave, and the death toll is almost certain to rise. The Shah of Iran flew to Saudi Arabia today after concluding his talks in Aswan with Egyptian President Sadat. He held a news conference before leaving, and John Sheehan has the story.
The Shah of Iran wound up his visit here saying that the voice of Egypt is the voice of reason and that President Sadat's peace plans are honorable, good, and sound. The Shah said he would take that message personally to Saudi Arabia and pledged a worldwide diplomatic campaign in support of Sadat. The Shah's visit to Egypt is said to have been suggested by President Carter. The Egyptians are grateful for any show of support that might bolster Sadat against his Arab critics. Iran, though not an Arab country, does wield some influence among the Arabs, but is also the major supplier of oil to Israel. The Shah declared that Egypt had offered the hand of peace in a dignified way and that the ball is now on the Israeli side. While saying he would like to see the Muslim holy places run by Muslims, the Shah stopped short of endorsing Sadat's demand that East Jerusalem be returned to Arab sovereignty. John Sheehan, CBS News, Aswan.
Israeli Prime Minister Menachem Begin took issue firmly with rumors of possible agreement on a territorial exchange in the Sinai Peninsula. Bruno Wassertile reports from Tel Aviv.
Prime Minister Begin says there is no basis in fact for reports that Egypt and Israel may exchange territory as part of a deal in the Sinai. There's been growing speculation that Israel might trade part of its southern Negev region for portions of northern and eastern Sinai, where Israel has built close to a score of Jewish settlements since 1967. In answer to reporters' questions, Begin also said that Israel has received no demand from the Egyptian government for $2.1 billion in compensation for the oil Israel extracted from the Sinai Peninsula during the last decade. But the prime minister warned that if Egypt asks for compensation, there will be counterclaims by Israel. Begin did not go into detail, but it's believed that he might be thinking of figuring up the cost to Israel of maintaining tens of thousands of soldiers in the Sinai over the last 10 years. Bruno Wassertile for CBS News in Tel Aviv.
Soviet Russia this morning announced the launching of Soyuz 27 with 2 cosmonauts aboard. It occurred just a month after the launching of Soyuz 26, also with 2 cosmonauts aboard. They are still in orbit, now traveling in the space laboratory, and it appears that there'll be another link-up. Rhodesia's military command reports that black nationalist guerrillas last night killed 4 white civilians about 50 miles from Salisbury. 3 of the victims were members of the same family. 2 12-year-old boys were wounded.
No.
You're the biggest theatrical agent in Duluth.
And I got that way by saying no.
My act is a natural for TV, nightclubs.
Let me get this straight. You come out on stage and crawl under a blanket for half an hour.
It's not a blanket. It's a Peruvian forecasting shawl. That's the big
thing. And you have to be under it to
foretell all the events coming up. Yes, that's right.
Well, you know that literary prediction you made under
there? Wonderful, wasn't it?
Well, it already happened. I read all about it in this week's Time magazine in the book department.
Oh,
and the movie prediction you made was in Time Cinema.
That's a coincidence.
And the trends in education
you talked
about. Arms Education Department.
Boy.
So I think you've got a Time magazine.
All right, I see the problem here. You don't believe I can foretell the future, do you?
No.
All right, ask me anything, and I'll go under the blank, the shawl.
Go ahead. How much pastrami will they eat in Yugoslavia next year?
Pastrami?
Yes.
In Yugoslavia?
That's right.
Would something like that come under the classification of business and economy, do you think?
I knew it.
Or is that more modern living type prediction? I know it's not letters.
Time Magazine, the most colorful coverage of the week. Pick up a copy.
The United States Supreme Court hears arguments today on the legality of a judge's decision to let a mother have her teenage daughter sterilized. Fred Graham tells us about it.
It began in Kendallville, Indiana, 7 years ago when a 15-year-old girl named Linda K. Spittler began to go out with young men, stay out at night, and worry her mother. Linda had suffered some brain damage at birth, and her mother, now remarried and named Ora McFarlane, was afraid that if Linda got pregnant, she could not handle motherhood.
Well, I did it to protect her because Linda is not capable of taking care of herself, let alone any little child.
Linda's mother went to court in DeKalb County, where Judge Harold Stump approved her sterilization. It was carried out, but at the time, Linda was told her appendix had been removed.
One thing, she thinks I'm retarded.
What else?
And she told me when they had my appendix taken out, said that I had a cyst on my ovaries, and said that they had to take the cyst out because it would have killed me.
Since then, Linda has been married, and she and her husband have learned what was done. They've sued Judge Stump for damages, and today the U.S. Supreme Court will hear arguments as to whether a judge can be held liable for approving actions that are not permitted by law. Fred Graham, CBS News, Washington.
The court announced yesterday that its senior member, Associate Justice William Brennan, is suffering from cancer, a malignant tumor on the left vocal cord. Brennan has been given daily cobalt radiation treatments and is expected to return to the bench in about 10 days. Among yesterday's actions, the court declined to consider challenges to the constitutionality of court orders that limited news coverage of criminal trials in Ohio and South Carolina. The orders forbade lawyers, witnesses, jurors, and parties to the cases concerned to make any statement outside the courtroom and formal court proceedings. Such bans are often described in the press as gag orders.
We make a delicious drink called malt duck. Now, we could be very selfish and drink it all ourselves, but for business reasons, we would rather have you drink some, which is why we're taking this time to instruct you in how to recognize delicious malt duck.
Hey, that's delicious malt duck.
Sounds simple, doesn't it? Well, in fact, with a little study, discipline, and self-testing, you yourself may someday be able to spot malt duck that accurately. Look for certain clues in trying to identify it. For instance, malt duck always comes in a bottle. It is red, and the words malt duck are on the label. Yes, practically overnight, you could be looking at a bottle of delicious malt duck and saying,
hey, that's delicious malt duck.
So try it yourself. Think of the prestige in being able to recognize malt duck. By its very name, you will know what it's called.
A move is afoot to have the government lift the quotas imposed on the fishing industry. Fishermen operating out of New England ports are especially upset, and Jack Harper of station WEEI in Boston tells us about them.
New England fishermen feel the quotas imposed under the 200-mile fishing limit are impairing their ability to make a profit. Some are not able to keep pace with the rising costs of operating their businesses. Massachusetts Congressman Michael Harrington plans to tell Commerce Secretary Juanita Krebs there has been a lack of communication. Those setting the rules are not listening to the concerns of the New England fishing industry. Harrington's immediate goal is to get larger catch limits for the future.
Something's going to have to be done to try to find a balance as far as the government policies that would ensure some level of income, some level of guaranteed maintenance of some of the obligations involved. So I think it's not so much what's happened in the past, though that has been disconcerting. It's what we can expect as the act matures and as our experience with it grows.
Many fishermen claim they can't make ends meet unless they are allowed to catch more fish. Today, they will deliver that message to Commerce Secretary Krebs. Jack Harper for CBS News, Boston.
Secretary of Agriculture Bob Berglund in Houston last night addressed the National Convention of the American Farm Bureau Federation. And Eric Engberg reports that he took issue with the principal aim of the farmers' strike now underway in some parts of the country.
Last week, meeting with leaders of the strike movement, Berglund voiced sympathy for their plight and support for their goal of 100% parity for farm commodities. But in addressing the Farm Bureau Federation, the nation's largest farm group whose leaders opposed the strike, Berglund argued that the government cannot guarantee parity prices without a virtual takeover of agricultural markets, which he said he strongly opposes.
We do not think that the government's role is to guarantee full parity income under all circumstances and to assume all the risks. For to do that would entail a bureaucracy that you wouldn't believe.
The Agriculture Secretary said there's no evidence the strike is having an impact on the marketing of farm goods, and he predicted that when the spring planting season comes, farmers will be back in their fields. Eric Engberg, CBS News, Houston.
The U.S. Civil Rights Commission said this morning that age should be ruled out as a measure of eligibility for federally supported benefits and services. The commission charges that both children and older people are being denied access to such services on the basis of age. American and South Korean officials in Seoul today reached final agreement on procedures for taking testimony from businessman Tongson Park. He's been under federal indictment for months in connection with the South Korean influence buying scandal and is wanted as a key witness in investigations of that affair. Robert Murphy, one of the country's most distinguished career diplomats, died in New York last night at the age of 83. He'd been ill since suffering a stroke last November. Murphy served in the government for 41 years, was a former ambassador to Belgium and Japan, did much of the planning for the Allied invasion of North Africa in World War II.